Broadcasting live from Wilmington, North Carolina, it's time for Cape Fear Seniors, where those who impact seniors' lives gather to tell their stories.
Welcome to Cape Fear Seniors. I'm Tom Petcher. I'm your host. And our guests today include Adam Shea from Adam Shea CPA and Mark Nebel and Scott Winslow from Nebel Winslow Investments. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank
good
you.
To have you here. I want to start with Adam on the CPA side. Adam, 2014 ushered in some pretty significant changes to North Carolina taxpayers from our legislators in Raleigh. Can we begin by talking about what implications those changes have, especially for taxpayers who are nearing or in retirement?
Sure. You know, one of the things a lot of times that people get excited about is they hear the rate drop to a flat 5.8%. So they get excited about that. There were some other changes, or are going to be some other changes behind the scenes. So, you know, previously, if you were retired, receiving retirement, whether an IRA, pension, other stuff that comes in on a 1099-R reporting that taxable retirement income, you could exclude up to $2,000 or $4,000 in that income from North Carolina income tax. North Carolina has removed that exclusion, so it kind of offsets the decrease to 5.8%. It'll be interesting to see with, I think some individuals will probably come out ahead. Some may be negatively impacted by some of the changes. Another thing notable to note is that Social Security still is not taxable at the North Carolina level. So that's a good benefit for retirees out there that are receiving that. And then the other thing is if people are a retiree from the federal government or a basically state of North Carolina local government and had 5 years of service before 1989, they still qualify for the Bailey settlement, which means that that retirement income is also not subject to North Carolina income tax.
Without getting too much into the weeds, what's the Bailey settlement?
The Bailey settlement ties into a North Carolina government lawsuit and settlement between, I think it came out of teachers, I'm not sure all the background there, between that and the state. And basically, it was a battle over whether those North Carolina state retirees would have to pay North Carolina income tax on their North Carolina retirement. It also covers federal retirees. So we see that a lot in this area where, and my dad's one of them who moved here into Wilmington as well. He was with the government for 30 years, and he doesn't have to pay North Carolina income tax on his federal government retirement because he had those 5 years before 1989. Gotcha.
So definitely some implications for folks either approaching retirement or in retirement. I also have seen that most everybody there are no exemptions anymore on the North Carolina state income tax. Is that correct?
Yes. So there are some changes where they've done away with exemptions. They've tweaked some of the deductions some, and they've limited, I think, mortgage interest and real estate tax. You can now only deduct up to $20,000 on the North Carolina side. So again, it's some things to your benefit, some things not. How that'll play out for everyone is going to depend on your specific situation. I would say, in my opinion, it's not as taxpayer-friendly as when you hear the rate has dropped to 5.8%.
Yeah, that's what I've understood, and I think that gets lost sometimes, you know, when people take a look at it. Let's switch over to the wealth management side. Mark and Scott, let's start by asking, what should seniors be looking for when hiring a financial advisory firm?
Well, experience primarily. Scott and I have been doing this for 20 years apiece, and so we have a lot of experience, but we do things in a team approach where we are trying to really make the seniors' lifestyle and retirement what they really want it to be, enjoyable, sustainable, and efficient with all their assets and taxes. That's why we always encourage somebody to work with a good CPA too, like Adam. But really, you want your retirement to be as enjoyable as you can make it too. So when they're looking for somebody, find somebody that has the experience to make that happen. They can just, not a product pusher, but someone that can go through and dig through, all right, what are the tax implications to what you're doing? Is Bailey Act, are you affected by the Bailey Act? Because it changes what you need to do with your retirement. How do you take your Social Security? These are things we don't do, but we help them deal with Social Security Administration to find out, how do you set it up so it's best in your favor? And then manage your assets correctly so it's sustainable, and efficient with what you do.
I want to dive into Social Security a little bit later in the program because I think there's a lot to talk about. But what is it? What's unique about working with folks who are in their 50s, 60s, 70s, unlike younger people?
Well, Tom, right now, when you look at people who are trying to get a repeatable, sustainable retirement income, it's really hard. You got a U.S. Treasury below 10-year treasury below 2.5% right now. So getting a safe, stable retirement income stream is a big challenge. And it's something that we analyze and look at every single day. And so right now, we're trying to go out there and find, like, what is our client's risk tolerance, but also how do we make sure they have enough money later in their years?
Yes, right.
Right now, people are living longer than ever, and I expect that to continue to rise. So we have to hedge them for inflation. We have to get them a tax-efficient, stable retirement income stream. And putting that in a bank CD or a 10-year treasury is not going to cut it. Mm-hmm. So we spend a lot of time educating seniors on what is their risk tolerance and what can they really expect when we do move out to things that are slightly more riskier than things are used to, like bank CDs and treasuries.
And one thing you're doing that too, don't make a big mistake.
Right.
What kinds of mistakes do you see people making or getting close to making?
Yeah, we've seen some in the past where they would lock up money that they don't really have access to, like they really think they didn't really read through, mm-hmm. you know, a contract they signed. You had some things like when Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were taken over in September of 2008 by the government. You know, they were government-sponsored entities, and people had a lot of money in those. They went to zero overnight over the course of a weekend. So a lot of wealth was wiped out.
Wow.
So you just can't afford to make a big mistake in retirement.
So how you work regularly with your clients? You see them on a regular basis?
Yeah, we try when we have someone that's got a constructive retirement income plan with us to meet quarterly, semi-annually, or really let them decide. But we want to stay in touch with them because right now you can't go and say, I'm just going to go invest everything in something that's 100% guaranteed. Mm-hmm, right. You will not hit your retirement income goal and you'll have a lesser of retirement. So in doing that, you know, some things Mark says, like we have a retirement gap year. Maybe when we get to market at some higher peaks, we go and sell off a year or two's worth of income and put them in much safer investments mm-hmm. to give them able to have a 3 and 5 year time horizon on things so they can be in things that we think are going to make them money that beats inflation and also make sure that their income and current needs are met.
Gotcha. Adam, the CPA obviously plays a role in this team as well. Can you speak to that a little bit? I mean, you were talking about the tax changes earlier in the show, but when you work with a team like these guys over here, Mark and Scott, what role do you play and how closely do you work with them when you work with a client? And do you all three share clients together?
Sure. I think it's important to put together a strong team, both on the financial advisory side, CPA side, everything, and have people that are willing and able to discuss things together, you know, work through situations. A lot of that work that goes on in that process may not be as tangible or identifiable mm-hmm. immediately to the client because, all right, maybe the three of us are doing a lot of work behind the scenes, really strategizing. And then you come together to the client with a couple ideas or options and discuss them. And kind of, I mean, my personal approach with everything with our clients is lay out the options, lay out the risk, lay out the potential benefits and help them make that educated decision. You know, and I think that's part of the value of the team. Sometimes you see people, both in their industry and in my industry, where you're just kind of, people get so heads down. They're like, well, I don't want to deal with their financial advisor. I just don't want to, you know, deal with that. But I think all of our belief around the table, you know, of proactivity, really looking at things with the holistic picture. Because the previous comment of, you know, what mistakes can people make, other things, is like, I see the other end of that where either people haven't had the right investments as they've approached retirement or done something over aggressive. And so I'm sitting across the table from people who moved down here who thought they were going to retire in 2 years that are still working because they're trying to play catch up or make up something that's kind of fallen through the
And there are process. Always tax implications when you're dealing with retirement. I mean, that's a statement of fact. Is that fair?
Yeah. I mean, it's something to look at whether you have traditional retirement accounts, Roth, Social Security, other stuff going on. There's all mm-hmm. these different parts there that can do that.
Let's jump into Social Security. I mean, I think that all of us more and more, I think, are getting concerned about where it's headed, how well it's being funded. Younger people, just to a person, as far as I can tell, believe it's not going to even exist when they get to retirement age. But those of us, and there are several of us in the room who are, you know, getting closer and closer to retirement, what's really going on with Social Security from your perspective? And I know politically you can't be see into the future, but where do we stand right now, and how much can people really rely on their Social Security that they've put their entire careers into funding? I'd like everybody to speak to that.
I'll start. This is Mark. I think they can rely on it to some degree. Think about Social Security. It's being currently funded by people working.
Right.
And so the things they can do to shore up, they can stretch out, you know, when full retirement starts. They can reduce benefits. There are a lot of things they can do. They can increase the taxation, you know, for Social Security going into it, too. So there are a lot of things they can do to sustain that. We had a gentleman came down from the Social Security Administration. He retired from there, and he explained how they think things through from the Social Security Administration. And those are some of the tools they have. You know, so I think it is sustainable in some way, shape, or form. It just may not be everything it is today.
You know, to expand on that, one thing I can tell you is that in the early 1930s when Social Security came out, they didn't plan for the length of lives.
Right.
And they also didn't plan demographically for the amount of people that would be in the baby boomer generation.
The bulge, yeah.
And eventually that will level out. But it does put some stresses on it for the next 20 or 30 years. But I do think Social Security, like Mark said, will be there. But it may not be the same thing that we thought of. And I think the main thing you're going to see is that you're going to have a higher full retirement age for people in my generation.
People who are retired now, will they see changes, or are they going to try to? Do you think that the powers that be are going to try to avoid making changes to that particular cohort?
I think politicians like getting reelected, and baby boomers and seniors vote. So I don't anticipate a lot of changes.
No, I think they'll try and grandfather in what they can. That's
right.
Normally what they do.
And you brought up politicians. We can't avoid the whole idea of politics. It's not an area that politicians really, really like to spend any time at all on, which is probably why there's some of the funding issues that it's facing right now, because they simply refuse is a strong word, but I'm going to use it anyway. They refuse to make the kinds of changes, or at least address the issue in a way that would make sense for the people who've been funding their own retirement through Social Security. Any tax implications there, Adam?
I mean, as far as Social Security itself, it can be taxable. It cannot be taxable. It really depends on what other income you have going on. On the high end right now, 85% of it could be taxable based upon your other income, and that's the federal again. North Carolina, it's not taxable. The other side on the tax side, and this kind of deals with the whole funding and where they're looking at with things, is, you know, right now you can basically make up to $120,000 or so in wages. And beyond that, you don't contribute additional money towards Social Security. So, I mean, just again, me thinking just possible solutions they might look at, are they going to raise that cap, you know, for people to contribute, or what are they going to do? You know, other possible ideas that Mark and Scott threw out is, you know, do they raise the age, or what do they do? But I do agree with them that I don't think it would be very politically toxic for them to touch people that are already, or the benefits that they're already receiving. So I don't think they'll do anything there.
Yeah. And on the tax angle too, we try to always, you know, look at somebody's provisional income to figure out the tax implications from what their investments do, too. You know, some things you can do that are more tax mitigated than others, too. So it's always, the taxes are always something to look at.
What should people be thinking about when choosing Social Security options? What options are there out there other than, you know, when you, and let's just go into that, when you start to draw?
Yeah, you have to be very careful. And the problem is people don't put a lot of time into thinking about their different options, because I've seen people take retirement early at 62, take a pension that has a Social Security offset, so they're stuck for their own end for the rest of their lives. No cost of living increases or anything. So we encourage people, we sit down with them and encourage them to go to the Social Security Administration. We give them questions to ask. You know, so if a spouse retires, say, at full at 66, and so the other spouse is a couple years younger, you can file and suspend. Your younger spouse can take a spousal benefit. Your Social Security is trucking right along. So you just have to look at each different situation to figure out what the impacts are on their Social Security. Because if you like, say, file and suspend or just wait from 66, you know, to 70, then you have a 32% bump in your pension income. Okay? So you just have to look and see each situation. What are the implications of filing suspending or not? Or are you eligible for it? If your spouse is too young, it may not be an option. And then if you have other assets like qualified assets, maybe you file suspend, don't take an income, dip into qualified assets ahead of time because your tax bracket's the lowest. That's where we work with the CPA just to figure out what's the best solution for them.
So a simple message might be, and I'm sure you say this to your clients, everything has to be laid out on the table.
Right.
You can't make good decisions either from a tax accounting point of view or from a wealth management or investment point of view without every single element being on the table. Are there some elements that sometimes people just don't even think about bringing, or do you just have a checklist that you make sure that they go through when they come to you for the first time so you know everything that's going on in their financial lives?
We have checklists.
We have them everywhere. I think the main thing is to get everything out on the table. And it is important to talk to a CPA like Adam who knows these things, because sometimes they forget things they have.
Yeah, yeah.
And so if we communicate together and there's a team approach to this, there's less things that are going to fall through the crack. And mm-hmm. the real thing is, how do you team with other professionals so clients win?
There are ways. There are always ways to kind of like manage your tax obligations in retirement situations. How do you help mitigate taxes so you can kind of keep as much of your money as you can legally?
Sure. Yes, and keyword obviously is legally there within the extent of the law
right, right.
as it allows.
And I put a big exclamation point after that one.
I think it all comes down to, and it's really no different than when people aren't in retirement as well, is coming down to proactivity, looking at your situation. So trying to figure out what your needs are, what your potential income sources are. So from a retirement perspective, you might look at, all right, what's the security you're receiving, when, you know, what investment brokerage accounts do you have outside of retirement accounts? It might be kicking off dividends, interest, capital gains, trying to set those up so that there's situations where, you know, you can have capital gains and not long-term capital gains, not pay taxes on them if they're in the optimal income bracket at that time. And then basically looking at retirement options, whether they have pre-tax accounts, post-tax accounts, looking at, you know, what makes sense. So if you have a big event in 1 year, you may want to then tap your post-tax account to pull money out of if you need to pull more versus pre-tax. So looking at that kind of, as I said, the overall holistic picture with everything. And then you also have to look at, I mean, probably don't see it quite as much as we would have without like 07, 08, 09 happening in there. But you see people approaching retirement, they're really not taking any money out of their pre-tax retirement accounts. And then they approach required minimum distributions when they hit age 70 and a half, where they have to start taking money out or they get penalized by the government. And they maybe would have been better all along for the last 5 years, pulling out a little bit and trickling it down. It may not have a huge impact,
right.
But in my mind, whether you're retired or not, every little bit counts.
So the planning really should start early. And not wait until, you know, you reach 67 or 70, a mandatory age. What kinds of investment vehicles are better than not for people once they're retired? In other words, there's a certain kind of investment you might be doing when you're in your 40s, but when you're in your 60s and 70s, with the assets that you do have, if you have investable assets, what are some do's and don'ts from that, from the wealth management side?
I'll start and then I'll switch over to Scott, too. There's some things you can utilize, too. There's tax efficient, like, say, some annuity structures. And there's good ones out there and bad ones. You have to just sort through those. But some will allow an exclusion ratio, which is sort of, you know, basically the return of your principal. It's a liquidation of your account based on your life expectancy. But what it has, and it sounds scary, but it's not necessarily. But what it has a tax angle to it called an exclusion ratio, which means all your income is not taxed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's deemed to be return of principal. So it's non-taxable, non-reportable. So quick, you know, scenarios like $1 million account, someone's getting $65,000 in income, $50,000, it's non-taxable, non-reportable. $15,000 is that in your Social Security, you're still in the poverty level, you know, but you're making about $80,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
There are some structures too, like real estate investment trusts, which case you can get a dividend, a monthly dividend on that, you know, north of 6%, but it's by and large non-taxable also. Tax-free bonds, everybody's familiar with, but they do have an implication in Social Security taxation. So we do have to be careful on those too. But anything?
I think there's two main things that a retired investor should really consider. And the first is that people are living very long now. And when you're 60 years old and if you feel like, hey, I don't want to take any risk, realize that you're going to be investing money for potentially 20 to 40 years, depending on your life expectancy. So I wouldn't shy away from stock investments. But what I would say to you is that to make sure that you understand a management philosophy and have a risk abatement strategy so that you're not able, like Mark says, make a major risk or catastrophic risk. Make sure things are managed that you understand them and that they're strategic. Right now, I'd be really leery of overwhelming overweights to like bond investments. We're at record low interest rates, and they're going to rise at some point. I'm not a soothsayer. I don't know everything. I don't know when, but I don't want to be caught holding that bag. So when you have things that people are used to, like treasuries and municipal bonds, they do have a lot of interest rate risk, and that can come back to hurt a retired investment later in the years.
To the average Joe, this just is so enormously complicated, which is why teams like you guys, tax side and wealth management side, is really important. I want to just veer off for a second and and just get your opinion, all three of you. How did it get so dang complicated? I mean, literally. I mean, are changes made every single year to add to the code over and over? And how has that been allowed to happen? It's great for you guys because it could provide a business, but the fact of the matter is it's hideous for the average citizen, and we can't change that. But I would love to know, and I think our audience would too, how did this really kind of begin to occur?
Probably politics. I mean, tax law changes, and there's major tax law changes every other year, seemingly. And so it used to be you try to keep up as much as possible. Now, I mean, I don't quite as much. I wonder how it impacts seniors, but I'll deal with someone like Adam to find out, you know, what changes do I have to, you know, pay the most attention to. And there are tons of changes. I mean, every year there's something crazy coming on the pike. But that's politics.
You know, our economies are constantly becoming more modern and more sophisticated. And, you know, not all of it's good, you know. But, you know, in the 80s, they came up with the 401k plan and basically shifted the investment risk off of all the retirees and middle-income people onto themselves. They didn't want to have these great cash flows into, like, retirement trusts to pay for these pensions. And now, so the baby boomers are really one of the first generations that had to save money in their IRAs. And I'll caution that you don't really want to have all your assets where they're fully taxable when they come out at the ordinary income tax rate at retirement. So it really changed, and I think that they didn't do a good job explaining to people that when you do have nothing but a 401k plan at retirement, that one, it is all taxable, and two, you are fully responsible for the investments behind it. And so these are things that we're out there trying to educate our clients on and talk plainly to them about on how to manage this and get them out and get the right functions, work with their CPA to figure out how do you get money out of these things and out of the 401k plan to an IRA or things of that nature. But it really is complex. We try to simplify it by just answering the client's needs.
Yeah, and that becomes even the 401ks have become more complex because no one wants to be responsible. You know, the plan sponsor doesn't want the responsibility.
Sure.
Everybody's afraid of becoming a fiduciary. They're pushing it all down the employee, and the employee just has to go online somewhere and learn the stuff on his or her own. So it's become tougher for everybody. It'll swing. The pendulum just swings too far one way or another. It'll swing back, too.
It will swing
more
back.
More common sense, yeah.
Question is when.
Yeah.
What about those individuals in retirement who are fortunate enough to have enough assets to be able to spread around a little bit? I want to get into the, just before we wrap up, I want to get into a little bit about the implications of giving, of gifts, as you're getting older, whether it's to family members or whatever. Can we talk about that? Because there's a lot of mystery around that.
Sure.
Sure. Yeah, so I mean, I can start out just kind of a little bit on the tax perspective of things. So, you know, if I want to give you a gift, Tom, I can give you up to $14,000 a year as a current limit without me having to report on a gift tax return. You know, if I want to give to your spouse as well, then I can give 28. If my spouse is involved, typically you can then get up to $56,000 annually. If you do end up going above that limit and file the gift tax return, then that just basically reduces your estate tax exemption down the road. So for some people, that doesn't really matter. The one caveat or risk I would say is, you know, right now the estate tax exemption limits a little over $5 million. It's like, all right, down the road, do they drop that back to $1 million again? And if so, does your gift tax exclusion apply against that lower limit? So I, even though the limit can be way beyond where a lot of people think they'll be impacted, I do caution to be smart and strategic about the timing of your gifts and, you know, utilize them. There's ways to get it.
Did you say the timing?
Well, just the timing of you know, whether you do it in a given year or, you know, there's situations where, you know, clients want to give a house or a down payment, large down payment to a house for, you know, for their child. Mm-hmm. And you can structure that where the parent has a note to the child and then each year they forgive a certain amount of that note or other things. So there's ways to structurally achieve it without tapping into that gift tax exclusion or limit or passing by that. So there's ways to get it, you know, within the tax code as it's written.
On the wealth management side, is that a tool that you recommend when it's appropriate?
Yes. I mean, very much so. The because we find there's a lot of clients that want to, you know, give to their families, you know, make more creative ways of passing assets along to their family. So gifting is part of that too. You know, taking your RMD sometimes, buying a life insurance policy, you know, using that in a trust to provide liquidity for a family is one thing you can do. The gifting, what I found too is if people have lesser means, they think they can give and give and give. and then they'll qualify, you know, for government assistance at some point for long-term care. Mm-hmm. But there's a look-back period, and it's a real nasty audit process, too. So they really have to be careful when they do that. So you have to be careful in the gifting, what your really, what your goal is and what your focus is going to be.
Got it. I think the biggest lesson out of all this is thank goodness we have professionals like you to kind of help guide us, because this is just too much for the average, as I said, the average Joe, to kind of really get his or her arms around. We're grateful that you're there taking care of your clients. And tell us just how people can get in touch with both your firms for future reference. Adam?
Sure. Easiest way for me is if people go to Wilmington Taxes and Accounting, that'll direct them to my website. That's okay. Probably the easiest way to get the general info. If they want a phone number, it's 256-3456.
And for Nobel Winslow Investments, what's the best way to get it?
Probably just Google us on the web. It's like NobelWinslow.com, and we're, you know, there on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Our phone number is 239-9130.
That's great. Adam Shea, Mark Nobel, and Scott Winslow, thanks so much for being on the show today. We really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us. Appreciate it.